Hi, I'm Ken Tangen, and this is episode 2 of What's It Like? My guest is Ayaz Akhtar. Most people know him as a technology writer, PC Magazine, and of course, thisoldnerd.com. But Ayaz, I have it on good authority that you actually started out as a child.
Yeah, I did start off as a kid. I was born at the tender age of 0.
Yes.
And I grew up a bit. Yeah.
So tell me from your own personal experience of actually having been a child and having a child, what's it like to be a child?
What's it like to be a child? Well, I remember a lot of things of growing up that I don't want my kid to have to deal with. A lot of it was meeting adults. And adults with your parents, they'd always be like, hey, you know, do this thing that you do, or come meet these people that you've never seen before. And it always irked me when my parents would tell me to do something. So I let my kid, when he's older, I guess, because he's only like a couple months old, 8 months old, I'm not going to make him perform. I'll just be like, look, dude, if you want to come in, you can. I have young nieces and nephews as well. And so I don't come up to them and make them do anything. If they want to come up and talk to me, they can. But I'm like, I don't act like a parent to them. I always hated that when strangers did that to me. They're like, well, you should sit down, son. It's like, who are you? So that's what I remember about being a kid.
So your son's big trick right now is sitting up by himself?
Yes, he can sit up. He's bouncing himself silly.
Oh my.
He's worn a hole in his like footy pajama things because he's on the bouncer so often that he's just busting right through it. He's growing so much.
Yeah.
So those are his tricks, and he babbles a bit.
Oh, good.
Which is nice.
Well, next step is crawling.
He's getting there.
Yeah.
He's really getting there. He just needs to figure. He's going backwards. He just needs to figure it out.
Yeah, well, it's backwards is actually easier to do. You know, you got leg movement pushing you back. So, yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yep.
Did you grow up in a large family?
I have an older brother, an older sister, and a younger brother. So there's 4 of us and my parents. So there was 6 of us in the house. We didn't have we didn't have pets or anything, but we didn't have our extended family over much because most of them were still in Pakistan. And my generation's first generation American. So we just hung out with our family a lot, and we're all very close in age. My older brother's about 3 years older than me. My sister's 2 years older than me. And my younger brother's 3 years younger than me. So we're all within 6 years. So we were in the same, you know, same schools together, and we would, you know, we'd know and we'd complain about the same principals together, that kind of thing.
So how did an American Pakistani get to a Roman Catholic school for education?
Getting to Catholic school was because we went to New York because my mom's father, my grandfather, he had a studio in New York, a photo studio, and they knew New York, so they came over here. And then my parents sent us to Catholic school because it was cheaper than private school, and it was close by the house. So like our house was about 2 or 3 blocks from the school in Queens, and so we would just go there. I mean, it became a trend later on. Like we were one of the first. And actually, now that I think about it, the actual makeup of the students there was actually kind of diverse. Now, I wasn't the only one who wasn't Catholic in there, and it became increasingly less Catholic, actually, as the years went on.
In fact, you went on to Boston University, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Boston University after high school. I majored and got a degree in biology.
Ooh.
I minored in business. It was like the first time I was away from home for real, and so I was less than studious, unfortunately, and so I didn't graduate with any honors, but I did have a good time there, and I loved the city. I loved Boston because it was completely a young town.
Right.
Everybody was within the same demographic. We would go to movies together, and the entire audience would laugh at the exact same time, and it was very odd because I remember like noticing it once. I was like, wow, this really is like a great study to see what this is like, and the one thing I hated about it was it closed at 2 o'clock. I'd growing up in New York, I never knew that trains stopped.
Yes.
I'm not even kidding. I was like, what do you mean they stop? And so that was a bit of a small culture clash for the first year.
Actually, Paris does that too. Everything closes down and usually like 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I think New York is one of the few places that goes 24 hours, 7 days a week. Even if it's a reduced schedule, you can still find a bus or a train. If you're willing to wait long enough.
Did you grow up with a particular religion or philosophical view?
Not particularly. I mean, I went to Catholic school, so we had religion as a class, so I learned a lot about Catholicism and Christianity. And in high school, we learned a bit about Judaism in school. And parents grew up with Islam, but they never really pushed religion on us very much. It was just like, okay, you're smart enough to figure out what you want. Figure something out. And so just I studied all three of the major religions effectively, and I chose to go with none of them. So but I know enough about them, and I understand, like, there's a basic tenet to all of them, which I think is the real simple idea, and this is what I really believe in, is just be good. That's all. Just be good. That's all you really have to do, and if that's what you remember, then and that's what you do, you'll be rewarded for it, maybe. Or even in your own life, you'll be rewarded. I don't know if there's afterlives. I don't know if there's – I don't know what's beyond this. But I just try to make, you know, every day good.
I always think that people acquire constructs of life, their basic understandings and rules that they have about themselves and about the world around them. And a lot of that we get from our parents. Looking back, how did your parents influence your view of yourself, your worldview?
Well, they were, I mean, this is going to sound strange. They're a little weird. You know, they were saying to me, when they came over, and they were like, okay, we just want to assimilate. We don't want to stand out. And so for the worldview, when I had come to a new area, I try to fit in. Simple thing. I wasn't doing anything to do, to stand out. I'm not trying to be special or different. Like, oh, I'm from New York. I'm in Boston. I'm going to whine about that. It was, you know, just come in, you know, do as the Romans do kind of thing. Just come in and enjoy what's going on, because I may be moving somewhere else soon, and I was thinking, do I bring New York with me? It's like, no, not really. What I'm going to do, I might bring something. You know, I might bring like a reclaimed piece of wood that I turned into an end table. But I'm trying to make it, you know, wherever I go, just kind of enjoy that. Actually, don't fight it. So that's kind of. That's one of the things that influenced my worldview, because anywhere I go, I try to just roll with it. Even if it's the DMV, I'm not even kidding about that. I know that I have to wait there for hours, so I'll have a good time there. So just that's, I guess that influenced me a bit.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a particular challenge in school? Anything that you found challenging, aside from studying, apparently, in college?
In college, you know, that wasn't really challenging. Let's see, what was challenging in school? I mean, growing up, I didn't really care for English class. I always had a very difficult time understanding why I was learning these concepts. I remember, like, in high school, hating reading all these stories and seeing all this poetry, and especially even in college, I really didn't like English courses. But the reason I always didn't like it was because I didn't understand what the point was. And the weird thing is, as I got older, I became much more of a movie buff. I started looking at, you know, I started understanding symbolism a lot more, and I was really glad I had learned this. But as much as I didn't like it learning it at the time, that was my least favorite. And I really loved math. I loved math because it was simple. It was, okay, there's one answer. I'll show you your work, and you can check it, and you'll be done. And I loved that. But English, I was never sure how to write in a convincing manner. And, you know, because teachers have different ideas of how you should write. And I remember saying recently to a fellow writer at PC Mag, I said, you know, the intro and the conclusion are the same thing. You just change the words. And he just, like, lost it. Because that's not how a person with a degree in English looks at it.
Well, they're bookends.
I look at it. I have a lot of science writing background. So with my degree in biology, like, you know, you tell them what you're going to say, and then you told them what you told them. So it's just what you're supposed to do in a lab report. It still seeps into my normal stuff. But for the most part, I was okay. It's gonna sound I'm bragging. I was pretty good at you know, most of the subjects. I was incredibly uncoordinated in gym, so I struggled with that a lot for the first 6-7 years. And after around high school is when I started hitting my stride. But that's pretty much it, I think.
So you studied bio in college.
Yes.
And then decided to follow it by going to law school?
Yes, I went to law school. Again,
why?
This is the parental, your lawyer or doctor. And I started off going for the doctor thing by getting the bio degree. But in the middle of this the whole schooling at Boston University, I found sociology. And I found that much more interesting. And I found business more interesting. I found a lot of other concepts other than science way more interesting. Actually, when I thought about it, physics would have been where I would wanted to go. But it was so late in my career that I could only finish up with bio. But since I only had two options, I chose being a lawyer. So I went to, I decided to apply to law school because I love problem solving. That's what it boils down to, even to this day where my career has really gone to a weird place. It's always the same thing. It's always breaking down something and problem solving. And so that's how I ended up in law school. Parental choice, and then I really enjoyed the work there. I mean,
What is law school like?
The first year's a trip. You know, you don't know what's going on yet, and people just hit you with these crazy concepts, and you don't even know what a tort is when you start. And I don't even remember being taught what a tort was, by the way. I think we were supposed to look it up. But it's like retraining your brain how to think. And you don't understand that you're being trained how to think for like at least the first 2 weeks, because you're just getting like, here's, read this case, read this, understand this, brief them. And you've never briefed a thing in your life. You don't even understand how you're supposed to do it, but they just tell you to do it. The first year's, you know, you're getting your feet wet, you're figuring it out. By the second year, you really hit a stride. You understand how to think. You can digest the cases. You understand what you look for. And it's really complex problem solving, you know, different fact patterns that fit. And again, training your brain to understand, what did you see, what did you read as a fact, and what do you know? How can you apply it? And for that kind of thing, it's the same. It's like for almost any rules. Like later on, I go into tax, and I went into tax law because I loved knowing the rules of the game. Same thing with, I'm pretty competitive in a lot of when I play games. It's because I look at the rules, I learn them, and then I will just bend them like crazy because that's what they're for. I know that sounds a little evil, but it's, if you're within the rules, you're still, you know, still good.
Right.
So that's how I found law school. I found it, you know, very exciting after, like, you know, after figuring out what I was doing. It was a lot of fun.
And yet you didn't continue.
No, when I graduated from law school, I actually wanted to go to tax law, and I did go into NYU and got an LLM in taxation. Oh. But the job market was so horrendous that while I was in law school, I started writing for technology blogs, and then I started a podcast because I was studying for the bar exam, and I needed a creative outlet because I was studying all day, and I started a podcast, which is a weird way to spend spare time. But that's what I ended up doing. And then I found I love tax. I got into the tax program. But then the market was so lousy, there was nowhere for me to go. But I was at the same time applying for tech jobs. And I wound up being an editor at Gadgetel. So I was like, okay, well, I'll take this because I need a job. I really can't. I can't change the job market, but I can earn money. So that was a simple thing. Why I went into tech is because it was the first one to give me a job.
And yet you didn't pursue law in tech.
Oh, no. I love tax law. I love that because to me, it's the world's biggest game. When it comes to money, I found out that people have the most creative arguments ever. I mean, it's really fascinating to me to see this stuff and to see the arguments that, like, I've met professors at my school, and they had figured out the rules so well that they had to change the tax laws. And I loved understanding that and figuring out, this is the best game ever. You know, I love playing games, that this is my favorite kind of game because you're up against some of the smartest people. And I didn't go into technology because I get so worked up. Like anytime I listen to a podcast and they talk about trademark law, they talk about any kind of intellectual property issue that happens in tech, that's where I get really fired up. I get really angry and I get really emotional, and I really don't want to do that for my job. I was very afraid that I'd burn out because I was going to, because every time I look at intellectual property, which is usually what goes into tech, I get so worked up that I didn't think it was a healthy option.
Well, it doesn't have any clear endings to it like tax law does.
You know, the weird thing is what I found out was that the constitutional law is based on just the Constitution and the amendments. So that's a very small set of information. And tax law has tons of, you know, regulations and, like, I know because I used to carry the books, six volume, a set of regulations and two sets a two-book set of the actual code, and neither and both of them have as much case law as for interpretation, because you can either overinterpret actual text, or if you have little text, you will overinterpret. So it turns out they have the same amount of interpretation. Same thing with intellectual property. I mean, just because it doesn't have endings, I mean, and tax does, they still get litigated like crazy. So it's a lot more active. They're all very active. And knowing what the rules are in IP, or knowing it in tax, or knowing it in con law, they're always so much more active than you could ever imagine.
Do you think you'd go back to law?
Would I go back to law? Depending on this next gig, I guess. There's this rumored gig. People might have heard this. I don't know if people have seen this, but I don't know how much I want to go into this. But there's a chance I may be joining a podcasting network.
Well, how fun.
Relatively soon. And if that goes well, then I probably wouldn't go back to law. Mm-hmm. It's not that I dislike it, but like I enjoy podcasting. I enjoy talking about technology. I've always been into tech,
right?
Since I was a kid. I wasn't into law when I was a kid, but I mean, like, so this is a longer, you know, held hobby of mine. But I don't know. I mean, I'll never say never. Mm-hmm. I never know. If there's an opportunity and I can help somebody with law, sure, I could see it.
What's the best part of your job?
Right now, the best part of my job is the people. The people at PC Magazine are a wealth of information. Like, I can randomly go up to Sasha Segan, and I used to read his stuff all the time. I can just ask him, like, okay, so what's the operating system on the BlackBerry Torch? And he'd be like, this one. I'm like, that's cool. That's really cool that I can do that. I can go into the labs and talk to the guys there, and, you know, they help come up with so many ideas for me. Like, I'll come in, I'm like, hey, I'm doing a piece on technologies that'll help you save money regarding energy costs. And they'll be like, how about this? How about this? How about that? And it's like, it's so nice to work in such a collaborative environment and in a field where everybody knows something about technology, and they may be more specialized in certain areas than others. And that's really a lot of fun for me, because I love, like, the conversations I overhear, like, those are awesome. Like, I love hearing people talk about, okay, well, iPad 2 could be like this, or it could, the playbook back when it wasn't even known, this was what it could be like. And it was just so interesting to hear all these things and hearing all these opinions that you'll never see, by the way. Like, some of this stuff doesn't turn into columns. They don't turn into tweets. They don't turn into anything. They just go into the ether. And just to, like, know that these conversations are going on and I'm a part of them half the time, it's a lot of fun for me. So it's definitely the people. I love the people there.
And you have to do some work there occasionally too.
Yeah, my work is relatively not as difficult as a lot of the other folks. I'm a features writer, which means I do slideshows. So, like, there's a picture of something and I write captions. It's not necessarily that difficult. But that's my job. It's a weird job to have, I'll tell you that. It's like knowing the guy who writes the back of the cereal box. It's like, how somebody does it, right? Somebody has to do it, but like, it turns out it's me. So I thought that was very odd, but I enjoy that.
So are you looking forward to Petaluma?
Am I looking forward to that? If for some reason I was going to Petaluma, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Again, the people seem like they would be nice.
Yes, I mean, the weird thing is I know at least, I think there's like 15 people there. I know about 10. So that's pretty good. You know, if you're coming into a new place and you're going to, you know, supposedly work for a whole bunch of people, it's good to know them ahead of time.
What surprised you about being in the tech business?
What surprised me? Journalists who came to shows for food. That surprised me. These were people who didn't care about technology. They just wanted the food that was at the show. And I found that, like, kind of reprehensible at first. I can understand why, because you hear the same pitches all the time. You get them in press releases. You don't necessarily need to go to the show to see the equipment. But, like, just to show up to, you know, to eat and leave, I'm like, that's a little weak. I mean, I love technology. I would go to these shows if there was no food anyway. Like, I love going to, like, PAPCOM always has events in New York, and I used to go to those when I was editor at Gadgetel. And you know, I get to play with these devices, and because back then that blog was so small that we weren't getting the same stuff PC Mag gets. I mean, PC Mag will get the Zoom, you know, a day early, but obviously since that's public knowledge now, so I don't have to worry about that. But everyone was there for food, and I was just like, come on, guys, there's tech right over there, let's go see it. That surprised me a bit. Apart from that, I don't know. I guess SEO. I don't really like SEO. I guess that's about it.
I guess every profession has a variety of people in terms of their passion for a topic. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like one of the things you really enjoy or are good at is that you really are passionate about technology and about the toys that you can play with.
Yeah, passion is a good word for me. I mean, one of the few words that people use to describe me is intense. When I get into anything, I really get into it. Like technology, I've been into that for, it's at least 20 years. I've been playing with toys. I mean, even before there was like, I mean, if my kid's going to grow up with so much more technology in his hands, I mean, he's grabbed, you know, the phone to FaceTime me. Like I didn't ever have that option. So the technology I had then, like maybe it was Kinex, right? I used to build this robotic thing. This is like pre, what is that Lego thing called? Mindstorm. Yeah. Pre-Mindstorm, we had these Erector sets. I mean, I had all this stuff back then. That was the cutting edge technology for children. I loved building stuff then. I loved when I finally got a computer. I remember I had a Tandy. I had a Tandy machine, and I accidentally closed out their skin. They had this weird skin over Windows 3.1, and I closed it out by accident. I was like, oh, I don't know how to do anything anymore. And I'm like, what's Program Manager? Oh, this is interesting. What's this window? Like, I started to understand. It's like, that's how I got into Windows 3.1 is because I closed accidentally the Tandy UI. I would lose hours and hours. And that's another reason why I don't game. I don't play video games because I get super obsessive about things. I'm intense, passionate, and obsessive. So I have to be very careful to not play video games like Angry Birds. I'll never play Angry Birds because I hear you never get out.
You are very intense, and you don't have a lot of facial expression, but you have probably the most expressive eyes that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I have very large button eyes. Usually, they're brown, they're dark, they're like pools. In person, you can obviously see a little bit of color if you stare at them. But yeah, that's something like I can't really do very well. Like I can't hide my emotion too much with these eyes because they're gigantic. And
that's great.
Son's got the same set, and he's just like he's tiny, so they're like anime big. You know? Yeah, but these were giant eyes. They're mine.
We'll be right back with IAS right after this. This is a reminder. Just a nudge, actually, to remind you of the good work being done by the American Red Cross. It's time to put something on your to-do list. It's something you should do. Go to redcross.org. They're doing good work and they need your help. Click on Giving and Get Involved and donate something to the cause. Somewhere in the world today, there are people you can help through the Red Cross. And don't forget to get prepared yourself for emergency situations. Go to their store and check out the Personal Safety Emergency Pack. Do yourself a favor. Give to the American Red Cross. Go to redcross.org. We're back with Ayaz. Do you have a particular hobby aside from or passion other than technology?
Apart from my family and my dogs, I have two dogs, and I have you know a young son, and I have my wife, and you know I like right now our living situation is kind of weird, but I like to spend time with them. As far as hobbies, when there's a lot of downtime, I like music. I love listening to music. I play guitar. I used to have a 4-track machine. I used to play.
Oh my!
I used to create tracks on tapes, and when I get time usually right now when I come up with music, it's usually for a podcast. Like if anyone's ever seen any of my other shows, if there's any music, odds are I've done it. I play guitar. I can play bass. I can play drums, sort of. but I usually let the machine take care of the drumming at the end of the day. But I love music, and I have a nice little guitar collection, and I get to play every now and then.
Do you play acoustic or electric?
I play electric almost all the time. If I can avoid, I mean, I can play acoustic. I have an acoustic guitar. It's good for when I'm trying to sketch out an idea. Mm-hmm. It's also a really good playing acoustic guitar, as I've found. If you are technically bad at playing a guitar, it's going to sound terrible on an acoustic. Now, a technically bad player might sound good on electric. So if you can sound good on that acoustic, that's another like a measure. I like to make sure that am I getting sloppy? Am I getting better? Am I worse? I love to play the acoustic guitar just to test myself because it does not hide any of your failings at all. So I loved that. I usually end up playing electric though because I like tinkering with the sounds. I like playing like I've always been fascinated with Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton, but Hendrix because of his backwards, like hearing the music backwards, to me was a very interesting thing. But yeah, I guess my hobby is just it's music. Or if I have free time, I fix things. I usually can't sit still. If I have nothing to do, like I go crazy. So I always have to like tinker with something. If I fix my network around the house, if I am setting up a media server, that's how this whole nerd even started. Was because I was doing these things anyway. Like, why don't we just record this? This is what I do.
You're moving against your microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is that because you needed something to do?
if you want to re-ask the question, I'll just.
It wasn't that bad.
It's just a nervous habit. I keep moving. Like I really, I cannot stop moving.
Yeah, you appear to be a moving person.
Yes, I sit and I watch people and I see them sit still, and I have no idea how they do it because I'm always fidgeting or I'm taking I'm crossing my legs, uncrossing my legs, and then I'm like, okay, I'll sit on my leg and I'll twiddle my thumbs or I'll look at my phone. I just don't know how people sit still.
Well, that's why you look like you do and I look like I do.
If you're gonna
sit still and be a Buddha.
I'm very bad at sitting still. that's why I wind up in the PC Mag Labs often. I wander there. I talk to people. I wander around a lot. Because, I mean, my job's writing, so I can think, and I can do that anywhere. So it's kind of nice.
When you need to give yourself a motivational kick in the pants, how do you do that?
I used to work at home by myself a lot, so I'm not opposed to talking to myself. So sometimes if I'm truly alone and I need to, figure out what I have to do, or if I'm panicked about something, I will actually ask myself what to do. And the weird thing is I try to separate it because if I ask myself as if I was somebody else. If somebody said to me, hey, I have this problem, what do I do? And I'll just answer the question out loud. And for some reason, hearing it back, not just it staying in my head, because in my head, like this happens to a lot of people. When you have this concept, you think you understand it until you have to verbalize it. And for me, that's where I found in law school, because when I would talk to people and I had to try to help them with something, or they were helping me, when they verbalized, they understood it better. Same thing with motivating myself. I will stand there and I will listen to myself talk and go, okay, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea. And like, it's basically, it's a pep talk. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to myself and I'll be like, okay, well, What would I tell somebody like me? I'd tell them, look, you got to do this. And if you're going to do this, and go for it. And if you're not, then don't. But don't do this halfway. So that's something that's built into my head no matter what. Mm-hmm.
But it has to verbalize it.
Yes, definitely for me, verbalizing it. Or, I call it a brain dump. I'll take a piece of paper and I'll write it out. Mm-hmm. Because then it's out of my head and then I have to see it. It's no longer this amorphous concept in my brain. It is actually outside. And when that's the case, it's a lot easier for me to process and figure out, okay, now I can do this. Now I can figure out how to do this. Now I can break it apart. That'll get me motivated again because I see that it's not that big a problem. Everyone's problems are huge, but like to me, my problems aren't that big. I can figure it out. And if I can't figure it out, I'll ask somebody and we'll try to solve it. But that's really what it's about for me is to just first, define. And by verbalizing, I define. And by writing, I define.
When you have to calm yourself, how do you do that?
Oh, boy. Oh, that's a hard one. When I have to calm myself down, that usually requires physical work from me. I have to usually remove myself from whatever's annoying me. I have to either, I used to go indoor rock climbing a lot. I would do that in the past. Right now I can't. I'm not in a location that has that. And, or this one is a really easy one. I pet my dogs. It's really, really therapeutic. They always have a smile on their face. They never ask you for anything. At worst, they maybe ask you to play, right? That's really not so bad. Mm-hmm. And they have this undying positivity about them that I try to, you know, I go, you know what? They're happy. I can be happy. You know, relax. And, you know, and I've heard that, you know, petting animals actually is therapeutic for a lot of people. That's why there's, I think called helper animals in hospitals and things. Mm-hmm. So if you have a pet, get a pet. If you don't have a pet, get a pet because they help a lot. If you can't, I suggest also doing yoga. I don't do that often. I used to do it when I was exercising regularly. I'm not doing it right now. But the yoga breathing to me and get your mindset in yoga just to relax your mind and your body, just to enjoy that. These are the three things I use. Two things. Physical activity and the dogs.
Well, dogs are pretty much living in the moment.
Yes, they are, and I admire that. Mm-hmm. And I try to. This is gonna sound odd, but like I try to think like them. I mean, it's like, okay, look, they are not worried about tomorrow or like dreading the trip to the vet they will have one day, and they're not dreading the toenail clippings. You know, they're just like, let's play now. Let's have fun now. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. So if I try to think of it, my life that way, is in terms of seconds, not you know, 3 weeks from now, what's going to happen?
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to your core?
Yeah, I think it's got to be my son. Having him, he's new. He's still new. He's 8 months old. So. There's a lot of patience that has to go into having a kid, which I mean, I heard about, but what nobody ever told me, and if you're listening to this, you should know this. For the first couple of weeks, that kid will not smile at you, will hardly track you, but will scream and poop. And you got this thing that's just yelling at you that has no appearance of recognition for you, and it hurts a lot because you're like, okay, you don't know what you're doing. This is my first one. I have never dealt with this before, so it's like, okay, well, all I can do is, you know, I've talked to the nurses already, I've talked to the doctors, they told you how to do this, you've read a book, just and the other thing is be natural about it. So like, you know, you want to overthink things. I overthink things. I don't like to overthink things. And so just, you know, what's natural? If the kid's crying, pick him up. Like little things like that. Yeah, he's challenged me a lot. I was a stay-at-home dad for a month. So we had a lot of bonding and a lot of challenges there. But that kid taught me to be very patient when you have to be patient. The simple fact is there's very few things that are just like a force. And a baby is a force. Yes. You can't control it. You can't tell it what to do. You can't reason with it. All you can do is react. Yes. So that challenged me a lot because normally I can extricate myself in the situation. You can walk away from something that's bothering you. Not your kid. You take care of that guy. So so that you really take this stuff on head on. So yeah. That was probably the most challenging thing that to my core that I've had to really rethink, you know, day by day. Okay, what do I do? Okay.
I remember going in to check to see if my firstborn was alive, just because I didn't know what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, oh man, how many times have I ran into the room? Is he crying? Because you hear that phantom cry. There's a weird phantom cry that you hear. I don't know if it goes away. I hope it goes away.
Yes, it does.
But I would have run into the room like, is he sleeping?
Oh, he's asleep. Yes. If you were giving high school graduation advice, what would it be?
High school graduation advice. Okay. Okay. So
this is your commencement speech.
Well, I always hated commencement speeches because it's usually some guy rambling about the future. Yes. And like something ahead of you and whatever. But what I probably would say is a couple things. One, I hope you had a lot of fun in high school because now stuff matters. High school is almost, I mean, you could goof off in high school and things are fine, but college, at this, you know, when you go to college, you're going to set the stage for the rest of your life. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. Yeah, I did. I don't. Yeah, I definitely don't recommend it. I'd say, or balance. Really, it's about finding a balance in your future life. But the thing is, what I would advise them now, that I didn't have to worry about, for the, just please remember that everything you do right now can be transmitted and sent off on Facebook or YouTube or something. So whatever you're going to do, please remember that you have to pass the, it used to be called the headline test or the headstone test. Whatever you say, whatever you write, whatever you do publicly, make sure that you intend to do it or you're going to stand behind it. And if you are not ready for that responsibility, make everybody take their phones off, you know, turn them off before the start of the party. That's the first thing. Protect your image a little bit, because there's going to be employers out there who are going to look for you, because these were not tools that were around when I was going to college.
So be stupid in private.
Exactly. If you're going to be dumb, don't have evidence. And if you're going to be smart, be public about it. But also, you know, college is a great time for experimentation. Find out what you like, what you don't like. Don't try to, you know, don't try to take your brain and go, I'm going to do this one path. You know, take that first, you know, year and just, it's like a buffet. There's a ton of actually interesting things there that you might find. You, like, I took philosophy. I took it because I wanted a 4-day weekend, not because I wanted to take philosophy. But it was actually really interesting to me. Like, it's the same. I love wordplay, and philosophy is a lot about defining words and defining concepts. So you never know what you're going to find. So, you know, just give stuff time. Mm-hmm. There's my minuscule commencement speech.
Very good.
Get out of here.
The last question is actually to help me get better at this process. Think of a moment in your life that we haven't talked about. What question should I have asked in order to get you to tell that story?
A moment in my life that you should... Oh, boy. Not a whole lot of, like... There's not a lot of huge, like, moments in my life. That's the problem. Like, you know, I was born, so you asked that. I went to high school. I did that. I went to grade school. We went to Catholic school for a while. I went to college. I went to law school. You asked me about my job. What else could you possibly ask me about? we talked about my kid, and that was a challenge. That was a good question for child. I think a lot of people are going to say their kid, because it also sounds bad when you say, maybe the question would be like, what's the biggest challenge you have, you know, outside of your family life or something? Maybe that one, because otherwise I would imagine that people would always answer, what's the biggest challenge or what shook you to the core? It's almost most likely going to be a child. I'd imagine. I don't know, but so let me just,
for some people it's bad events.
Oh yeah, I guess. Yeah, I would look at it that way. I guess if that would be the opposite question, you know, what event beyond, you know, the one you just said shook you to your core? Because that would get me to answer the death of my father. That was pretty hard.
How old were you?
I was 24, something like that. I was around 23, 24.
About the same age as I was when my dad died.
Yes, that was unexpected. He was 53. And
Heart attack?
Heart attack. Yep, second heart attack. The phrase they use, massive heart attack, and yes, horrible things. And so, like, I mean, that gave me a lot to think about. You know, okay, well,
what happens so suddenly? You don't get much opportunity to do things.
And the worst thing was, like, I just came back from my honeymoon with my wife, and I just seen him, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was visiting with them like a couple of days before it happened, and they said, hey, do you want to say bye to dad? I said, nah, I'll see him next time. And he wasn't there. Obviously, he didn't. And I was just like, oh, that sucks. But the one thing I did find that did help me cope throughout the whole thing was we never had really unfinished business. There was nothing about us that we always talked as adults, which was weird. Like when I was a teenager, he talked to me like I had an opinion that mattered, which I thought that's another thing that helped me with my kid, is I want to make sure that I give him that same thing, where just because the kid's 12 or like a 9 and he's got a good idea doesn't mean it's a bad idea because he's 9 or 12. It's just listen to that. But for me, I got to, you know, take care of my health. You know, that's another big thing, heart attack. So don't eat poorly, simple one like that. and, you know, have your affairs in order. My dad was a sloppy fellow when it came to his notes and his billings and everything. And he had like post-its and things. He had a system that I would never recommend. So that's helped me out a bit too. Like, you know, be organized, that kind of thing. So that really, I have some lessons I've learned, but like for that, I'd say like 3 months, I was a mess. I mean, you know, you'd just be like driving in your car and you'd get hit. You're like,
yes,
what was that? And you're like, you know, you're a wreck. And so you learn to cope. I mean,
yes,
simple as that. And then you just, you know, try to look at the positive stuff, but that really, really like, okay, reset moment, figure out what's going on. What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? Simple as that.
I want to thank Ayaz for joining me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. I hope the audience gets something out of this, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks.